Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Duluth Rundown, a podcast focused on the local Twin Ports running scene. My name is Tony Stensland with Tony Stensland Coaching.
And I am Mike Ward with Duluth Timing and Events.
All right, quick thank you before we get started to our sponsor of this episode, Austin Jaro, Duluth's original running store. That's the place to get your running shoes. Great advice from all the people that work up there. Check out their website, austin-jaro.com. They are also on Facebook and Instagram. Drive on up to their location on Central Entrance, just on the other side of where the Home Depot is, but on the other side of the road. Or give them a call, 218-722-1185. Thanks so much to Austin Jaro.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to Duluth's original running-based podcast. We're no longer the only one, because Grandma's Marathon has a running podcast. Pretty good. It's called Gearing Up. I think it's called Gearing Up for Grandmas, but they continue to do it now. Yeah. But we're the first.
Yeah. The original.
The original. The Duluth Rundown is the first. But welcome back, everybody. Again, we've had a little bit of a delay between episodes, once again, as Mike and I's schedules have just been crazy busy, so we're squeezing in some time to get this part done. And in fact, we're going to do this one even without the interview portion, just to save a little bit of time for us, and just get this part done and get something out to you guys. So again, we apologize for the delay and hope everybody's running and training has been going really well. Mike, how have you been, sir?
Yeah, good. It's good to get a podcast session in, and it's been kind of a struggle to keep on a schedule here, but that's okay.
Things should get better now too, for hopefully for both of us. My training group ends this week, and my race is this weekend, and so I'll have, you know, my weekends will be a little more open. You have your big race coming up in 2 weeks, so that should give you a little bit more open weekend.
I think we've both been building up, and
right.
I think our listeners can at least relate about the time it takes when, you know, you want to train well for a race and
time. And then, you do a 20 miler and then, you know, obviously that takes some time. But then you know, you don't want to just hop into something right when you get home. You need some time to chill. At least I do. You know, and just recover from the run.
And make for a boring podcast. Be like, I agree.
Dead tired.
So, anyways, should we hop right into it?
Let's do it.
All right, let's start with some recent races, since it's been a while, over a month. And I think in Duluth, September is kind of the prime race season.
Mm-hmm.
Races are coming back, you know, from COVID, and we have a lot of races to recap. So we're just going to kind of zing through these. First, we missed, I think five NMTC series races. I've attended four out of the five myself, and they've been quite enjoyable. Zaps Loop, Lester Park, Browns Point, that's one I missed, Hartley, and Rock Hill. And all the results are online at nmtc.run, but I figured it would be, you know, kind of efficient to just talk about the top three in the series points, because of course the fall trail race series is a series with a accruing points, which I think is something that's so fun about it. Jacob Wortman is on top for the guys with 743 points. Ethan Anderson is second, 739 points. And Jacob Brown is third for the guys with 711 points. And there are one, two, three, four races left, two of which are this week, one on Wednesday, one on Sunday. And then the remaining two are on subsequent Sundays.
Yeah.
Although Wild Duluth weekend, and not this weekend but next weekend, is a rain date.
Yep.
So I think the last two are, late October essentially.
Mm-hmm.
On the ladies' side, Christy Nixon, 740 points, a pretty commanding lead on the series. But of course, it really makes a difference if you make every race, which Christy has. Anna Swartz is second. For the ladies, 695 points, and Molly Watkins, a little tighter race between second and third, 693 points. So hopefully everyone in this top standings kind of keeps it going, because a lot of times there's some really cool prizes, race entries, and shoes, you know, some bigger ticket items that are given away.
I've been looking at the race results as they pop up, and It's interesting. Just looking at some of the names up there, I don't recognize a lot of the names anymore.
Yeah.
As kind of the years have gone by, the new faces are arriving, and I don't know these people anymore at all.
Yeah.
It's been interesting to see that occur.
I've noticed it up front. It seems like there's a lot of the UMD Run Club.
Yeah.
People.
Okay.
And a lot of those people are really fast.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's. I think new people get into it. Young people, you know, get into it, and I don't care who you are, though. It's so fun. I think the racing is almost unmatched.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even in the area, it's so fun. If you haven't been out there, anyone who's listening, I mean, there's four more races. It's so fun.
I think the fact that for the regards to the racing, the fact that it is more or less every week. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you and I have talked about this before.
Yeah.
You're kind of racing against the same two or three or four people almost right. all the time. And that's actually really fun.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes you beat that person and sometimes they beat you, but you get to try it again the next week.
Yeah.
And go again the next week. And that's really what I think intensifies the racing.
You know how to pace with a person based mm-hmm. on the placements. And
yeah.
It's so funny. I've toyed around with it a little bit because, you know, I got dropped off or passed mercilessly a couple races. Like, I'm just going to stay with these guys, you know, until I have a kick left.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And actually it went worse because they just, same deal, just left me. Like, and so then the next week I tried to go with my tried and true race strategy, which was go out hard and build a buffer of time and try and hold on.
Yeah.
And I had like a better placement. I felt like I had a better time, you know? So like that's that sort of thing. Like what other situation do you have to like practice that race intensity and that race strategy?
Right.
Granted, they're all, you know, 5 mile runs. So it's that, but,
that's a valuable skill. And it doesn't matter if you're not, the same effect takes place regardless if you're trying to win the race or if you're in the middle of the pack or the back of the pack. It's the exact same thing. You're still trying to compete against that person that you're always next to.
Yeah.
So everybody gets to develop those same skills.
Exactly.
If they want to. If like the true racing is important to them where they're trying to compete, then you're going to get that skill regardless of where you are.
Yeah.
So I think it's valuable.
The camaraderie too, you get to know the person, you know.
Absolutely.
It's so fun.
Yep.
Don't want to forget the third gender category, non-binary. Sam Frey has a commanding lead on that one with 599 points, just one shy of the perfect season. Well, Sam missed Hartley, I guess. So either way, 599 points. Claire Jones is second in the non-binary category with 150 points with one finish at Rock Hill.
And how many points do you get if you make all of the races?
Gosh, let's 100? See, 25 points. First place in each race earns 150 points.
Okay.
Second place earns 149. And then it just goes down from there. 25 bonus points if you participate in all of the races.
25 bonus points, okay.
Yep. Cool. But you get to drop your lowest score
as
well.
That's right.
So you drop a zero if you missed a race. So that's very exciting. A couple left there. Moving on, we had the Grandma's Minnesota Mile. Let's see. We'll kind of just buzz through. In the men's competitive, that was won by Matthew Rosen with a 4:39. The women's competitive was won by Emmy Trost out of Hastings with a 5.
Former UMD runner.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, 5:30. Commanding lead. Emmy won it by over a minute.
She runs for Minnesota Distance Elite.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The Masters competitive, David Hypanen, 5:17. He's been on the podcast before. And the, I guess, the men's and women's Masters ran together. The winner of women's Masters was Susie Johnson with a 7:02. So congrats to everyone who ran that in the fairly new course up at Enger Tower. We also had a new run, a first-year run, sponsored by Ursa Minor Brewing called the Oktoberfest Hill Climb and Trail Run. The 5-mile trail run was won by Kyle Severson, 36:17. And Christy Nixon, who, of course is atop the NMTC race series. Nice job racing out there, Christy. 40-56. Next, we have the North Shore Inline Marathon. We'll focus on the running races. Of course, there's the popular Tunnel 10K run. Evan Walpole won that with a 32:55. Smoked the competition by over 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Elena Bergen won the ladies division, 44:01. And then in the Wheels Off Half Marathon, Louis St. George wins, 127:26. For the guys, for the gals, Kristen Regis, 140:41. Another new race is the Bridging the Gap Women's 10 Mile. And actually, I was there as the race timer.
Oh, nice. Yep.
So I got to kind of see it. That was a pretty cool event.
Mm-hmm.
Inaugural event,
mm-hmm.
women's only. But now it's kind of with an asterisk. Men could race, but they couldn't place for age group awards. It was strictly women for age group awards.
And I think there was about 10 or 12 men that...
Yeah.
That took place in the race. I went and watched it, too, down at Leicester. I was watching them come down the hill. It was cool.
They had 750 people max, their mm-hmm. max capacity, which I find, I mean, almost unbelievable for a first-year event. So that's pretty incredible. You know, I think it had all the elements, like cool course, mm-hmm. Unique distance, 10 mile,
mm-hmm.
And for a good cause for the Women Entrepreneur Fund.
Yep.
So I thought that was very cool. Cool to see, you know, first year event like mm-hmm. that take place. So 584 finishers. Chelsea Youngberg out of Duluth won the race with a 109:02. Right behind her was Rachel Perko, also from Duluth, 109:28. And Keegan McAuliffe, 17 years old from Duluth as well, was third with a 110:50. So, I think that was a pretty cool race to see. And I assume that will be back next year. Next, this past weekend, Cloquet River Run, 5K and 1 miler. We'll just do the 5K results. That's the more competitive one. 1 mile is more of a kids' fun run, I think, although sometimes there's some speedy times. Barry Fisher won with an 18:37. And on the ladies' side, Megan Nielsen, 23:21. And... the last, I guess, race to comment on is the Grand Traverse. We don't really have results for that one. They are online, but it's kind of more of a fun run, supported trail run, essentially.
They post results, but they don't,
I
don't believe I'm pretty sure they don't do any awards or anything like that. Yeah, they just kind of let everybody know what their official time was.
So the 10 mile, 17, 21 mile, and 27 mile were... I believe 2 weekends ago. So, So that is the recent race results rundown. We use NMTC.run. Also, a lot of these were found on mtechresults.com. If we missed any, give us a shout, theduluthrundown@gmail.com, and we can comment on any ones that we missed. So,
yep.
What do we got for upcoming races there, Tony?
Upcoming races, you know, we've got. Still a lot of NMTC races. The next one, as we record this, we're recording on Monday, the 4th of October. So on this Wednesday, the 6th, is the Woodland Run. Starts in that little gravel pit just off of Jean Duluth, just kind of on the outside edge of town. And starts and finishes there, so that's where the parking is. Kind of winds around some of the local trails up there. Really, I think, a really fun run. After that, we've got the Bull Run, which is out on the kind of West Duluth area, Chambers Grove kind of area. Then Rolling Stone is another NMTC race. Hawk Ridge on the 31st. And also, I think that's the last NMTC race.
Yeah.
And then also, I know the North End Nightmare that the Grandma's Marathon / YAF puts on over in Superior, that 5K.
Yeah.
New course this year. I think it's going to be a little bit of a nicer course. It might not quite be as quote-unquote fast of a course, but I think it's going to be a little more scenic-y kind of. I think it's going to be a better course
for sure.
So check that out. Either way, it's a pretty flat race. There's not a lot of hills or any hills on that section of town. And so if you want to run a fast 5K, that would be worth giving a shot at. And if anything, it's just, I think, a lot of fun. I haven't done it, but I know that you've been there for that race.
I've been there.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun with kind of the Halloween theme and different kind of quote-unquote spooky areas that you kind of run by. So
I'll be in a spooky area this year.
Same?
The creepy clown town.
Yeah, I wondered. Nice.
So I'll be there. I mean, that's a perfect time if you're a Halloween person to get in the spirit, because it's on Saturday, October 30th, so the day before true Halloween.
Yeah, exactly.
But, it's in the evening on that Saturday, so fun event.
Yep.
Yeah. I think there were some pretty competitive times in the past as well, so, I mean, even if you want to race.
Scott Bailing maybe won it
a couple years ago. Suit on.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Kind of a goofy event, but,
Fun way to kind of finish up the season, too.
Right, so right. Let her rip, I guess.
Yeah.
So. All right, moving on to trail conditions. Pulling up the DuluthMN.gov, the city website, has kind of a nice conglomeration of different trail areas in the city, which is an easy reference point. For instance, Cogs trails for mountain biking trails, Superior Hiking Trail, and just general parks are all listed, and currently they're all open. This was updated 10-1, so as we speak, what was that, Friday or Thursday? And it was rainy all weekend, and I will admit, you know, a little bit begrudgingly admit that I ran in Hartley, Chester, and Bagley, you know, three natural surface trail areas this weekend when it was raining out.
Yeah.
And you know, it wasn't raining like super hard. I didn't get soaked really, but I mean the trails were wet, you know, and I kind of second guessed myself, but I really wanted to get the trail run in, you know, so I kind of had this mental battle a little bit. But really what I was looking for were the footprints, and there appeared to be no footprints except on just the soggiest kind of troughs, you know, where the water kind of collects. And you know, puddles were avoidable, and so in that regard I felt I guess safe to run on the trails in that state, you know, based on the lack of footprints, I'll say.
Yeah I think it's just fine. I think you always have to use a little bit of judgment, even though, you know, if it is raining, usually you don't go on the trails, but it's been so dry this whole summer that rain just hasn't really, I don't think we've had a trail closure of much longer than like a day or two all summer long.
Right.
So I couldn't imagine that the trails aren't closed now, you know, as you look on the site. So everything's open. So I'm sure it was all just fine.
Right.
So,
I'm going to just check the COGS site while I have it up and see what they say, because that might be a little bit
sometimes they might be a little quicker than the,
so we got one update from Mission Creek, raining now, trails closed. Lester, Hawkridge, wet and closed. That was from October 3rd, which was Sunday yesterday.
Okay.
So
that I could almost see. So Lester, Hawkridge, okay. Yeah. I could kind of see that one maybe.
However, then Piedmont has an update from today. Beautiful blue sky day has dried up the trails. Everything is open.
Yeah.
So Hartley, UMD, Downer, Chester was not updated recently, and nor was the City of Duluth site. So, I mean, I think when in doubt, there are these resources like the Superior Hiking Trail Association website, the COGS website, or Twitter, rather, the City of Duluth website. But ultimately I think it's stated best on the city's website. Trails should not be used during wet weather or when trails are soft / muddy. If you're leaving footprints or ruts, please turn around.
Do you know, speaking of, you were running in Bagley, does the city have jurisdiction on the Bagley Trail since it's UMD?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. Yeah, I imagined the new COGS trail that runs through there. That they probably do, but I don't think they do on the Bagley wood-chipped trails. I could be wrong about that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that, to me, is kind of definitely the place to go to if it is a little bit wet. Because they're wood-chipped, and so there barely is any exposed mud slash dirt at all, ever.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the big issue? I think the issue is, you know, a bike tire or a footprint, if it leaves a depression, more water goes into that depression, and then over time it becomes like the mud pit that you see on the trails.
Already erodes the trails. I think that bikes almost do are worse than a footprint.
Yeah.
Because the bike trail tends to be a little deeper because it's a little more narrow.
Displaces more.
Yeah, and then it's a constant, continuous path. Stream. So it creates kind of almost more like a river as opposed to a small lake that a footprint would cause. Right. And that river, quote, you know, sort of river kind of thing, will then cause a little bit more erosion as the water rushes through that little trough.
Right.
So potentially I think bikes can do a little more damage than footprints. That's my thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just certain trails, like especially like Chester, for instance, it's so highly trafficked. Mm-hmm. And I think it's built in such a way that in a deluge of water, it's going to be resilient. You know?
Yeah. So, that's another thing. Yeah. The older trails almost do better than the younger trails sometimes because they're so compacted and everything that could wash away already has washed away.
Right.
That's been my experience just anecdotally looking at trails as I've been going along, that the old ones, they do just fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I think ultimately, you know, to use your best judgment and discretion is probably the best bet, but also it's just interesting to have that mental battle of like, I probably shouldn't be here. But, like, I really want to, you know, like, I want to get my workout done. Like, this is important to me for my training.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
And the roads wouldn't be the same effect.
Right.
So it's I think, challenging to, like, do the right thing, I guess.
It can be. It can be. Especially when you have your heart set. Oh, this is, you know, the colors are great right now.
Yeah.
You know, the trail, the parks are beautiful. So, yeah, you want to get out there and enjoy that. And then sometimes you're like, oh, I can't. It's no fun. And.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I want to be a good steward as much as anyone else, but ultimately, no footprints, I figured is.
Yeah. Okay. I think so too. I think if there's no footprint, it's fine. Well, it's just fine.
Good enough for me.
Yeah.
All right. So enjoy the trails. Beautiful time to be on the trails. How about thoughts on the run? You were thinking about a question to ask.
I have a question for the listeners and for you, Mike, actually. And I'll give my answer too. Historically, you know, traditionally, everybody does their long run on the weekend. But some do it on Saturdays and some do it on Sundays. So that is my question to the listeners. What day of the week do you do your long runs? I'm a Sunday person by necessity. How about you?
I use whatever day I need.
Okay. That's nice.
Generally, especially if I'm training hard, like, you know, I'll make kind of like a weekend checklist, like, you know, go grocery shopping and do my laundry and get the long run in.
I have a question actually regarding that.
Yeah.
Do you draw up a training plan for yourself or do you just kind of wing it?
Both.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll draw up the training plan. Sometimes I kind of wing it. Generally, there's some type of structure though.
Yeah.
For me personally.
Yeah. So then when you're going, if you choosing a Saturday or a Sunday, it's depending on kind of what the weekend's looking like.
Yeah, like weather-wise, my other things I have going on, schedule. But, like, the run gets bumped up highest, especially if I'm training hard. Like, the laundry can wait.
You're right.
I can do that later.
Right.
So, that all being said, I think generally I'm a Saturday long run person because then I can just check that most important thing off my list and just move on to the rest of my list.
Be done for the weekend.
However, I'm not hard pressed to do it on Saturday every time.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just feel lazy and I'll do it like Saturday, like night or something, like kind of weird.
Okay. Yeah.
Whenever. Yeah. I'm flexible.
Nice. Yeah. I used to be a Saturday person, but since I've done the training groups, they have their Saturday long runs. So I've switched mine in the last 13 years now to Sundays. And I kind of like the Sunday thing, actually.
By necessity.
Yeah, yeah, just by necessity.
But you like the Sunday.
But it's working out. I kind of like the Sunday. It's the last thing of the week. I consider Sunday to be the last day of the week.
Yeah,
I know
calendars
say Sunday's the first day of the week, but
yeah.
I don't. Yeah. And so that's just kind of the way I cap off my week of training with the long run. Mm. Kind of like that. So, I don't know.
Have you ever tried like a non-week based training plan, like 10-day or 10-day something?
10-day thing? I haven't. And I know people really like that. A lot of, you know, people talk about masters doing well with that because you get more recovery time.
Great.
My big, here's what I would say, actually, that would I think would be similar to a 10-day plan is you just don't do a long run every weekend. You just do, you do a 7-day plan, but you only do your long run every other Saturday or Sunday. And that would be a pretty close, you know, comparison to the 10-day plan where you'd have some more time in between some of your workouts. You could just make it where your non-long run weekend, you do a workout on a Monday and a Thursday or a Tuesday and a Friday or something like that. Mm-hmm. So you get some more time in between those days. And then maybe the week that you have a long run on the weekend, you kind of go the classic Tuesday, Thursday, then your long run on the weekend. Yeah. And then your next week is a quote-unquote easier week.
Right.
You could do it that way too. I think that would be similar to a 10-day week. Because with a 10-day week, you've got your long run sometimes on a Tuesday or a Wednesday or Thursday, and that's I don't know how you do that and have a job, you know.
Maybe
and
if you're a master's runner.
If you're a master's runner, you're retired, like a grand master's runner. Yeah.
Grand master's, yeah, right.
Yeah, I think it would just be really difficult to try to squeeze that in.
Yeah, so. I mean, I think for most Americans, right, the Saturday or Sunday long run works the best. And
it's worked that way for people for decades now, so.
You're right.
I like the idea of the 10-day week, but 10-day plan or whatever, I just don't see it fitting into people's schedules super well. Yeah.
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 Like a 7-day cycle for the rest of our lives. Why not have it with a running plan too?
Pretty much, yeah. Exactly.
Unless I'm training for an ultra marathon, then it's long run Saturday and Sunday.
With a lot of traditional kind of marathon training that I've done and that I prescribe for a lot of people, that Wednesday is what I call a semi-long run.
Right.
You know,
right,
10 to 16 miles maybe, sure, depending on the time and the person.
Yeah.
I mean, that's on a Wednesday, and that's hard to squeeze in, too, and maybe you do it in two runs. I don't know. That's fine if people need to do that. But that's pretty good. That's good enough, I think, and then you're 18 to 20-miler on a weekend.
It wasn't consistent, but I've done a couple long runs on early Friday morning, and I thought that was interesting because it's close enough to the weekend time where it would like fit within the 7-day cycle,
right?
But just for whatever reason decided to do that on that time, and actually was really nice.
Yeah,
because
I can see that.
Just like similarly, like I want to get the long run done on Saturday morning to get it kind of done for the weekend because it's my highest priority. Mm-hmm. Well, on Friday morning, it's like, oh, I really have nothing going on, you know.
You could even leave town then Friday night work or something like that. Yeah.
Right. But, I mean, to squeeze that in and then get to work, it's tough, you know.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yep, for sure. I was wondering, you were telling me about that off air, and I was thinking, I wonder then, if you complete your work day, do you kind of start to loosen up as the day goes on? You know, you kind of almost walk off the long run in a sense.
Right.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
How many people do their long run on a Saturday and, like, sit on the couch the whole rest of the day?
Most of us, and that's, like, the worst thing to do, but it feels so good.
It's the best, though.
Then you kind of pay for it later.
Right, almost.
So, kind of walking around. I know, talking to Matt Welch one time, he was talking about doubles. He's like, even after your long run, do a double. Run later that day.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and absolutely. Makes sense. I've never done that. I've done a lot of doubles. I really love doubles, but I've never doubled in a long run. Not once.
I've been actually frequently doing a long run on the weekend and then going for a walk after.
Yeah.
And because I feel bad for my dog because I don't take Diamond with for the long runs because she's too old and slow.
Mm-hmm.
But then I feel bad because I've been gone all day exercising.
Yeah.
Like, what about me? Like, all right, let's go. And so, I mean, the walk is like painful and slow, but I call it the sniff tour. You know, we do the sniff tour around the little parks. I like it, you know.
Yeah, that's a good way to kind of walk off the long run, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Saturday or Sunday?
Saturday or Sunday. Let us know on our Facebook page. We'll do a little poll.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Great.
See what people have to say.
I'd be really interesting to hear what day and why.
Yeah, yeah. So, it really, yeah, yeah.
It'd be fun.
It'd be kind of cool.
Next, we have gear review, and I know that we both kind of have some shoe reviews. Coincidentally, we both have races You're racing in less than 7 days. I'm racing in less than 14 days.
Yep.
So, Tony, what shoe are you picking for the marathon?
So, you know me, I'm kind of a shoe geek, and I had a hard time deciding what my race with shoe was going to be. This was actually, I made this decision probably a good 6 weeks ago or so, but
yeah,
up until then it was kind of tough. I was going to go with the Adidas Audio 6, which is I love that shoe.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very quick shoe. Really like it for tempo workouts and that kind of a thing, but I don't know if it has enough width underneath the foot for 26 miles, especially given kind of sometimes my wonky ankles and I'm doing whistle stops, so that trail surface sometimes, you know, he's a little twisty turdy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm going with the Hoka Mach 4.
Oh.
So similar shoe to the Adios, about the same amount of weight, a little bit more stack height, not a lot, but a little more stack height. It doesn't have the fast foam that the Adios has this great foam that really pops underneath the foot. I just love it on the roads.
Yeah.
But what I like most about the Mach 4 is it's got a really wide base underneath the foot. So when my foot hits the ground, it just stays there. There's not a lot of twisty movement at all. And I think that's going to pay dividends by the time mile 18 rolls around.
Right. So, just don't want to have a twisted ankle early on or something.
Yeah, and I just don't want to get overly worked and get sore and just that discomfort late in the race. There's going to be enough discomfort as it is late in the race.
Right.
So.
What about carbon plate? Do either of those have a carbon plate?
Neither of them do. I just kind of made the decision not to buy a carbon. I don't want to buy my speed.
Sure, fair enough.
That's where I stand on that issue. Personally.
So, what have you been training in mainly?
Hoka Bondis has been my almost. I have a couple of pairs, an older pair that are kind of my shorter runs.
Yeah.
And recovery runs and that kind of thing. A newer pair that's my long run.
Nice.
Shoe, and then the Mach and the Adios, depending on what I'm kind of doing that day. Those have been the three shoes that I've been rotating through.
Nice.
Yep.
I'm sticking with the Hoka mainly.
Yeah, kind of. And I was doing the Brooks Glycerin GTS for quite a long time.
Eventually,
I started kind of my training in that, and I thought, I just want some more cushioning, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little concerned about that drop being so much lower. I was really a little paranoid about that drop.
Yeah.
As I think you'll talk about here in a little bit.
Yeah.
For your shoes, but it turned out to be just fine.
Huh.
I've been just fine in the Bondis. In fact, if anything, I've almost been better. My ankles are as good as they've been in a long time.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Do you think it's because of the lower drop?
I think it's because of the cushioning, but it could be. I don't think it's the drop, but I think it's the cushioning, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
But there's two variables. You just don't know which one it actually is.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the combination of the two. Who knows?
I think the most important variable is the variation.
Yeah, that helps too.
I think everyone should have a zero drop shoe and a high drop.
Yeah.
12 mil drop shoe.
Yeah, that could be said for that. I wouldn't have bought that argument a few months ago, but I could buy that argument now. Just
personally. A few months ago.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Because I was pretty anti-low drop. That's why I said I don't want to buy these Hokas, but I'm just going to try it.
And those are like four.
And those are four. Four or five, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not even zero drop.
Yeah. And ultras. I don't know if I'll quite go to zero, but maybe I will.
Have you had ultras before?
They don't fit my foot. I don't need a wide toe box like that. I have a narrow foot, so it's just too much shoe. It's too floppy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What other manufacturers make zero drop?
Zero. I think maybe Topo might have one.
Like Hoka doesn't.
I don't think anybody else does. Saucony used to, but I don't think they do anymore. I don't know. I don't know if there's anybody that does zero drop.
In the grand scheme of things, the Hokas and an Ultra, they're in their own category. And
they
then
are.
The Brooks and the Adidas are kind of separate. So
yeah,
it's
exactly.
Close enough, right?
Yeah. And it's that whole drop thing is, you know, it doesn't get discussed as much anymore as it did 10 years ago with the minimalist stuff, but it really is interesting. Shoes kind of used to be mostly zero drop shoes, running shoes, but then what they found out was people were getting Achilles tendonitis so bad, and so they inserted what they called at the time a heel wedge.
Heel wedge, yeah.
To lift up the heel a little bit to take the stress off the Achilles, and they found, what did they find? Oh, Achilles tendonitis started to really drop.
Right.
So the thought that
oh, they Nike just did it to sell shoes so that they could put the Air thing in there. That's not true, actually. It's a marketing thing. No, that's not what it was at all. In fact, the first Nike shoe that had Air wasn't the Air Max with the visible Air unit. It was the Air Tailwind, and you couldn't see the Air unit at all in that shoe.
Yeah.
But I guess my point is, a high drop shoe works.
Right.
As does a zero drop shoe, but everybody's a little different, and maybe people can do both, just like you said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they should try.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I think it just makes your foot stronger.
I don't know. Yep. There's something to be said for that. Yeah, for sure.
So
And how about you? You've got. Yeah. What are your racing shoes?
I didn't know. All I know is all my trail shoes for Wild Duluth, leading up to Wild Duluth, all my trail shoes were getting kind of old.
Mm-hmm.
But I had like a pair of my favorite, the Brooks Cascadia,
mm-hmm.
is my all-time favorite classic, and a Saucony Peregrine.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really like the Peregrine, and my Cascadias were a little too small, I thought, and just kind of getting old and making my foot hurt. Now from Day Across Minnesota, I think I really messed up my big toe. I think I have a bunion.
Oh, in the bike shoe?
Yeah.
It's
crammed in there.
Yeah.
And my big toe was numb for several days.
I can see that.
And then it's been tender, really pretty tender ever since, over a month later.
Yeah.
So it was kind of this, like, I start training, and like, wow, that big toe is irking me. Like, what can I do, And then the small Cascadia is getting old, like, doing some of these NMTC races, like, really pretty inflame that pretty well. I don't know what to do. So I tried on a bunch of pairs of shoes because I knew I was going to get a new pair for the race. I wanted fresh ones.
Yeah.
Tried on a bunch at Duluth Running Company. Even the new Cascadia is my favorite. Big size. Just didn't hit right, The Ultras, the Zero Drop, which I've had a pair just that I kind of alternate of Ultra road shoes, the Torin Plush.
Mm-hmm.
Is what it's called, and I love it. I love that shoe, but I alternate,
Is it the cushioning or the drop?
It just feels great.
Okay, good.
But really, the shoe fits my foot just wonderfully. Like, they feel so good for me, and I do like the cushioning. And the drop, I just kind of just convinced myself that it's good for your foot to have the variation,
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason. Anyways, tried on a bunch of trail shoes at DRC, and I settled on the Ultra Lone Peak,
mm-hmm.
and I just kind of bought it anyways. Like, I'll keep it in my repertoire or whatever, but I'm probably not going to race in it because I still am too scared,
mm-hmm.
to do a zero drop shoe. So then I went to Austin Jaro, and they had a wide assortment of old Cascadias, several of which I've had the model in the past, so I kind of know they work for me. And then the new model, I said, forget it, I don't like it. It didn't feel right, so I purchased a bigger pair, a 12 and a half. I think I have 12s before, and it felt great walking around the store, very good. Now, this past weekend, was my first run in the Brooks,
mm-hmm.
and then my maybe second long run in the Ultras. And doing a 6-hour trail run in the Ultras, I think, has convinced me. I think they feel better than the Brooks, and I'm going to race in them.
Okay, yeah.
So I still have 2 weeks to kind of hash it out. I'm a little nervous. I think I'll have my crew try and bring the Brooks them.
Just switch them out.
Just switch them out. That's not far-fetched at all.
Yeah.
But I really like the Ultra Lone Peak,
mm-hmm.
and they feel great.
I did have a pair of those. The first year they made them, I forgot I had those.
Hmm.
Yeah.
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 For my tender big toe, it fits so well, because on the trails, if I roll in just ever slightly,
mm-hmm.
like onto the big toe, like inwards,
mm-hmm.
it can be kind of excruciating because it's just kind of tender,
Yeah.
And so to have that extra room in the Ultras, the low drop feels fine, the cushioning is great, but I think that extra room is kind of the difference maker personally for me, so.
It's funny you say that about bike shoes, because I just have the one pair that I bought whenever I kind of got into the biking thing, and they told me, oh, you kind of want them a little snug, you want them kind of tight.
Right.
I'm like, oh, okay, what do I know?
I do wish I had bought, I think I have a 42 and I wish I had bought like a 44.
Yeah.
Because my foot is used to that space from running all the years. And yeah, my toes get crunched after a long ride.
What's the downside to having a too big bike shoe?
That's my thought too. They're like, oh, it needs to be stiff and it needs to be tight for all this. Yeah. But the shoe's already so stiff.
Yeah.
And you can put an insole in there and make it even more stiff.
Right.
So yeah, and the next bike shoes I get, I'm getting them like, I don't know, at least a 43 and maybe a 44.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine aren't bad, but I think I kind of messed up my big toe, and I even went for a short ride, and I was like, this does not feel good.
Yeah.
I realized, you know, on a long ride, 4 hours plus, that it would get pretty, numb.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the 20 hours,
yeah.
It was like, numb. But then the next morning, it was still numb, and that's a weird feeling. You get up out of bed, it's like, ooh, that's weird.
Toe is still numb.
Yeah, and for several days.
Also, when it's cold, too, having a little extra room in your shoe, I think, helps kind of insulate a little better. You can maybe even put a thicker sock on or some of those toe warmers or something where you have a super snug shoe, and it's just you're just wearing an ice cube eventually.
Yeah. Maybe the bike nerds will chime in and tell us why you need a snug
I'd like
bike
to know
shoe,
the reason why, because I'm not buying the whole sort of stiffness and power thing.
Not buying it.
No. There's got to be another reason.
That's our gear review. We got the Hoka. What is your Hoka?
The Hoka Mach 4. I got those up at Austin Jaro. I got all my shoes up there, and they've all worked really well, but the Mach 4 is going to be my choice. Yeah.
Got a Hoka Mach 4 for Whistle Stop Marathon and
Whistle Stop Marathon.
Ultra Lone Peak for Wild Duluth.
Cool.
We got a shout out.
Got a shout out to, speaking of gravel biking, to our buddy Nick Nygaard, who finished second at the Heck of the North, which is super impressive. Really cool to see that he performed so well. So super fast time, like under 5.5 hours, I think 5:21 or something like that.
Crazy.
I can't remember. I mean, that's flying for 100 and some miles of gravel.
I mean, flying 100 miles
over 20 miles an hour.
I heard that the course was especially rocky, muddy, and
interesting. I haven't heard at all.
Laden with snowmobile trails.
Oh, really? More than normal.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's all pretty just anecdotal. You just kind of chitter chatter that I hear. Oh, a lot of snowmobile trails this year.
Is that right?
I don't know. Yeah.
I'd be curious to hear from somebody who has ridden a lot of the Hex and knows, you know, how much there often is for snowmobile trail versus gravel roads. So cool. Well, that makes it even more impressive, because it's hard to ride fast on those snowmobile trails.
I don't know if there's a more versatile athlete to perform that well as Nick. I mean, to do a sub 230 at Grandma's,
right?
I mean, like a sub, I think he went sub 10 at Ironman Wisconsin, under 4 hours 20 minutes for a half Ironman triathlon, and then like 5:21 or whatever the time was.
Maybe isn't
on paper say much, but I think to get second place at that race is, I mean, that's like cyclist, spandex wearing, you know, people, cyclists, are in the top 20 or something.
Right. Some of the best people from the state and from Wisconsin and Michigan come for that race, and then just hammer on that. And there's some really stud local guys who do really well in that in that race too, that are kind of bike ski folks, you know, specifically, you know, and you know, Nick's right up there with them. It's pretty
really
cool.
Impressive finish and finish placement for sure.
Yeah. Yep.
Also got a shout out to Kyle Sather for 5 years running streak.
Yep.
Which is
over 5 years now.
To me, that's unfathomable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know how.
It's so impressive. Nice job, Kyle.
It's crazy. Yeah. Finally, we got a One I'm Into segment. Tony, what are you into lately?
Well, right now, what I'm into is, I just kind of got a little bit started today, but I'll be working on it the rest of the week, is building our tiny little mini deck in front of our sauna, so we have a nice place to step out onto and cool off when we get out of the sauna. So
I get that built before the snow flies, huh?
We do. I had a nice little area before. It looked all nice with rocks in front of it, but it wasn't functional. You'd step out and you're just kind of standing on these awkward rocks, and it was tilty and everything, and I was like, oh no, this just doesn't work. So I had to tear it all up today, and I was a little sad to tear it up, because it really looked nice. It was hard to build these big rocks, but it'll be much better with a little actual deck.
Safety first.
Yeah, safety first, convenience, everything.
Yeah.
What about you? What have you been into?
Really, I think what I've been mainly into the last handful of weeks is training. Yeah. You know, I've been really trying to rack miles for Wild Duluth, and I mean, it's been kind of just a, I don't think it's a smart training plan really, but you know, the last 6 weeks has been just a pretty rapid buildup, and the last 2 weeks, you know, was trying to get miles in. I think I ran over 15 hours last week.
Nice.
And so, I mean, that's just a lot of time. It doesn't leave a lot of time to be into anything else.
Right. So, yeah, for sure.
On the flip side, it's so fun, you know, and it's just very satisfying, mm-hmm, to say I want to run 80 miles in a week, mm-hmm, and on Sunday you look back and done, some of that seems like kind of unfathomable and like, oh, it's gonna be so hard, but to get it done and to know that, you know, mm-hmm, set up well for the race is satisfying and relieving, and
yep,
yeah, all that. So
cool.
I think that's about all we got for episode 42 of the Duluth Rundown. Anything else, Tony?
I think that's about it. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks to Austin Jarl for being our sponsor of the race. Hope to see a lot of you folks either at Whistle Stop for myself or, you know, at some of the NMTC races that are coming up as well. I think I might be at the last one. Might just show up just because that's the potluck and there's food there. That's why I'm showing up.
Or at Wild Duluth. We didn't even mention that for the upcoming races.
Oh, yeah, we didn't.
Oh, well.
Wild Duluth is coming up, too.
Wild Duluth is coming up.